We're living in a stressful time. As the coronavirus outbreak continues, many of us are at home in an effort to stop or slow the spread of the disease. Others still go to work because they have to, while navigating an uncertain moment in our history. Throughout all of this, we're still inundated with news about the virus and its impact on everything from public health to the economy. All of this is causing many people to feel stressed out, anxious. Our normal coping mechanisms are all but impossible right now. Things like going out to dinner, meeting up with friends, even going to the gym. And as we continue to use social distancing to keep others and ourselves safe, we're more cut off from our social circles. Our next guest is a mindfulness expert and joins us to talk about steps we can take to address our individual and collective anxiety. Richard Davidson is the William James and Vilas Professor of Psychology and Psychiatry at the University of Wisconsin-Madison and the founder and director of the Center for Healthy Minds. Richard, welcome back to Central Time.
Thank you so much. Happy to be with you.
Well, big picture, what's your take on the kind of collective stress and anxiety levels that are out there right now?
Well, we're clearly facing unprecedented times, and it's really challenging for all of us. There's absolutely no denying that the suffering that is occurring globally is really unprecedented. At the same time, we're being asked to engage in changes in our lifestyle that contribute to our anxiety and to stress. We're being asked to socially distance. One of the things I'd like to invite our listeners to reframe is this idea of social distancing. I actually think it's a misnomer. We're being asked to physically distance. Fortunately, we're living in an age where we can physically distance, and at the very same time, we can actually socially connect, not socially distance. One of the consequences of physical distancing is that we can help prevent the spread of the virus. We can help minimize the likelihood that we ourselves become viral vectors. And this is actually an act of kindness, an act of compassion toward ourselves and toward others. And so if we can reframe our behavior, if we can reframe the instruction that we're being given and reflect on how when we make a commitment to engage in physical distancing, we're actually engaging in an act of generosity toward others. It can really help to change our relationship to the predicament in which we find ourselves.
Yeah, you recently wrote a piece on that. I really want to hammer that point home, the idea of changing the way we think about this from a negative, we're cutting off from people, to a positive. We are compassionately protecting people. How do we stay mindful of that distinction?
I think to intentionally reflect on this each day, and I think many of us have had the experience of checking in on our friends and loved ones, calling them, video conferencing with them. I mean, we're living in an age where we have that kind of technology. And I think many of us are finding those moments to be especially important. And so reflecting on the possibility that we can still remain socially even more connected than we typically are, and at the same time practice physical distancing. And in the act of physical distancing, we're actually benefiting ourselves and benefiting others. And literally spending a few moments each day intentionally reflecting on that. You know, we can do that at mealtime. You know, we often are accustomed to eating out with friends, and we don't have that opportunity anymore, or at least we shouldn't be. And we can use that as a reminder that we're actually doing this for the benefit of the entire global community to help prevent the spread of this terrible virus. And so if we can take even a few minutes each day to do that, I think it can really help tremendously in decreasing our anxiety during this particularly challenging time.
We're talking to Richard Davidson from UW-Madison, founder and director of the Center for Healthy Minds, about anxiety in a time of coronavirus. And refocusing things when we can in a more positive way. And Richard, what you're just talking about reminds me that a few years ago on the show, you introduced us to something called, I think it was called compassion meditation. And it seems like this would be a really good time for some of that right now. Can you explain that to us and how it works?
Sure, that is true. So with compassion meditation, we can think of a loved one, for example, or we can do it with ourselves. And we can envision how we ourselves or a loved one, or it could be really anybody, is challenged at this particular moment in time and the difficulty that they are facing. And we can cultivate the aspiration that they be relieved of this difficulty, that they be safe, and that they be healthy. And we can do that with different people. And we can simply spend a few moments reflecting on each person. We can use a simple phrase like, "May you be safe and healthy." And then move on to another person and then simply rest and become aware of whatever sensations or feelings or thoughts may arise. Doing that on a regular basis, even just for a few minutes a day, we know from our scientific research can really be beneficial in improving our emotions, cultivating a more positive attitude, and actually having biological effects, which are beneficial.
How can we then, hopefully having gotten that sense of compassion in our own heads, make sure that it actually spills over, that we communicate our compassion for other people and give them a boost at the same time?
Well, one of the things that it might do, for example, is if we envision a friend or a loved one who is going through challenging times right now, maybe what we do is after we do this practice, we give them a call and just check in. How are you doing? And tell them we're thinking about them. And that simple act is something that can be so consequential for another person's well-being. And we have, virtually all of us have the technology to do that.
For anxiety, I think a lot of people, I mean, in general, a lot of people deal with anxiety in their daily lives, more people now and more so now, probably. How do we key in on that anxiety that's a background noise, become conscious of it, and then do something about it to not let it dominate our lives?
Well, I think that these days with the current pandemic, it's not difficult for most people to notice their anxiety. One of the important insights that we glean from the kind of research that we do is rather than trying to get rid of your anxiety or rather than trying to push it away, to simply notice it. And by simply noticing it and acknowledging, well, here comes the anxiety again, it doesn't completely hijack all of you. You can recognize that there are parts of you that are not going to be swept away by this anxiety. And you can simply observe it. By observing it in this way, it doesn't completely grab you. And gradually, over time, as we do this more and more, it becomes less challenging.
How do we practice that? How do we get used to acknowledging the anxiety, not denying it, not fighting it, and, letting it take its course while we run the rest of our lives? How do we get good at that?
Well, we actually in our center, we associated with our center is a nonprofit entity called Healthy Minds Innovations. And we've actually developed a scientifically based app to cultivate these qualities and practices, and it's completely freely available. So I would encourage listeners to go to the website, Try Healthy Minds, all one word, tryhealthyminds.org, and they can learn more about it on that website. And they can download the app from the App Store or Google Play. It's available both in for iPhone and Android devices. And there are guided practices that you can do each day that are very, very simple and accessible. And they're meant to be for all people. It doesn't require any prerequisites. And you can learn in the privacy of your own home right now.
We continue our conversation about how to deal with stress and anxiety in the era of COVID-19. Richard Davidson stays with us. He's the William James and Vilas Professor of Psychology and Psychiatry at the University of Wisconsin-Madison and the founder and director of the Center for Healthy Minds. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your thoughts, experiences, or questions. What are you doing to manage stress right now? What questions do you have about ways to alleviate anxiety? Do you do things that involve mindfulness, meditation? Do you have some kind of practice in your life that helps you get through stress now or anytime? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Richard, we heard from a couple people on Facebook. Dave says, I've been getting outside more and enjoying the early spring. Jessica says she's been running and lifting and getting sunshine whenever possible. Richard, let's talk about doing things like getting outside or even looking outside. Is that something simple as it is that can affect our state of mind?
Yes, I do believe it can, and I think that that's great. There actually is scientific research that indicates that being out in nature is beneficial for our brains and our bodies. And so if you're able to be outside and at the same time practice physical distancing, that's fantastic and could be very, very helpful. It is also possible to take a walk and be outside and at the same time engage in specific practices that can cultivate mindfulness and kindness and compassion. And so, for example, as we're walking outside, when we see others physically distant, we can, in our minds, wish them well, wish that they be safe and they be healthy. And the simple act of doing that mentally is something that could be beneficial for ourselves.
That's
and
a great
so,
point.
That's
a great point, Richard, because we're out there walking a lot and people are kind of maintaining that distance. And it can feel not just physically distancing, it can feel socially distancing.
Yeah, and this is a way to just connect without getting physically close.
We got an email from Anne in Madison who writes, a lot of charities can't use physical volunteers now, but many can use an online monitor. Can gives you a feeling like you're doing something to help, which, Anne says, reduces anxiety. So taking a small but concrete action to help others, Richard, is that a good method too?
It's terrific. You know, we know that generosity is one of the most effective strategies in promoting well-being. So anything that we can do to be helpful to others is really, part of the toolbox.
We're talking to Richard Davidson from UW-Madison, founder and director of the Center for Healthy Minds, talking about anxiety and what to do about it in tough times. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Seems like people are more comfortable so far doing this in print, sending emails to ideas at WPR.org or posting online on the Ideas Network Facebook page. But if you do have maybe advice to share for others, you can join in at 800-642-1234. We heard from Larry on Facebook who says, it's a matter of being patient. Fussing about it doesn't make things better. And Richard, that makes me think, I think people who have dealt with anxiety know kind of the spiral that can happen. You're anxious and you're anxious about being anxious, and it can be this self-replicating cycle.
It is. It's a vicious cycle. And mindfulness and other related strategies can really help to break that so that we can simply be aware of our anxiety and not be all wrapped up in it and allow it to hijack our entire mind.
Now, let's talk about meditation a little more specifically, Richard. I know it's something you've studied a lot and written about a lot. First of all, I think there are a lot of people out there, I'm probably one of them, who think that mindfulness and meditation is something other people do. We're not meditation and mindfulness kind of people. What would you say to people like us about exploring something along those lines?
Well, I would encourage you to have an open mind about it. You know, when human beings first evolved on this planet, none of us were brushing our teeth. And we've all somehow learned to brush our teeth because we recognize that it's good for our personal physical hygiene. My view is that in 20 years from now, meditation, simple mindfulness practices will be as commonly performed as brushing teeth, because we'll recognize that this is actually something good for our minds and our brains. And I think most people would agree, and pardon me for those dentists or dental hygienists that may be listening, but I think most of us would agree that our minds may even be more important than our teeth. And so engaging in practices to nourish our mind every day is just something that should be part of our personal hygiene.
And one of the amazing things I've talked to you about in the past, Richard, and you've talked about this a lot, is it's not just a feeling that we get in meditation. It actually does change our brains. Can you talk about what we can see when we're meditating and when we make a habit of meditating?
Yes, there's no question that it changes our brains. It changes our brains functionally. It also changes our brains structurally. That is the actual physical wiring of the brain. And it doesn't take much to see these changes begin. We know that simple mindfulness practices strengthen circuits in the brain that are important in regulating our attention. And our attention is a really important commodity. It's an important competence that we have. And the ability to regulate our attention is so critical. We know from recent research that the average American spends 47% of her or his waking life actually being distracted, not paying attention to what they're actually doing. Can you envision a world where we can actually make a dent in that number, even if it's a modest one? Can you envision how things might be different if a teacher is fully attentive to his or her students, if a parent is fully present for their kids, if a physician is fully present for their patients? I mean, this world would be a different place. And it doesn't take much to educate those circuits in the brain.
You mentioned that free app available at tryhealthyminds.org. People can check that out. But in our last minute and a half or so, can you give us a basic mindfulness practice that we could try putting into practice tonight?
Absolutely. So what I would encourage our listeners to do is to find a comfortable but upright posture. So they're sitting in a way that is relaxed but awake. And you can simply close your eyes if that's more comfortable, or leave them open, whichever feels best to you. And bring awareness to your body and simply notice whatever sensations may be present. You can pay attention to your breathing. You might notice that your abdomen is going in and out as you inhale and exhale. There may be tension in certain parts of the body. And this is a practice of simply noticing. It's not trying to change your body in any way. It's not trying to fix anything. It is simply a practice of awareness, simply becoming aware and just simply relaxing in that process. And if you find that your mind has wandered off and you're thinking about something, the moment you notice that it's wandered, simply bring it back to your body. And that simple practice can be enormously beneficial.
Fantastic, Richard. Thank you so much. Really appreciate it.
You're most welcome. Happy to do it.
Richard Davidson is a professor of psychology and psychiatry at the University of Wisconsin-Madison and the founder and director of the Center for Healthy Minds. He joined us today to talk about how to manage anxiety during the coronavirus outbreak, and he gave us tips about how mindfulness can help during uncertain times and compassion, too.